navigate computer technology and the internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today's show is about Trend Worry-Free Business Security Services, the new anti-ransomware tool, the cybersecurity kill chain, and cookie handling in browsers are breaking HTTPS security. Well, my goodness, where to start? I did tell you in the last show that I would not abandon this whole cybersecurity kill chain thing and leave you hanging and wondering what all that was about. So this show is going to cover that. But first, let's start off with, I always like to bring it home to you, what can you do yourself in order to get this stuff in action for you? Well, you know the story about you need a perimeter security appliance, but if you don't have that and you can't contract with someone to actually implement, manage, and maintain that thing for you, as well as the SIM logging and the security analytics and stuff, which, yes, I will fully admit, it is expensive to do so, but that's really what's required these days. So, barring that, you could at least get yourself a license of Trend Worry-Free Business Security Services, and you could properly configure it. And mostly out of the box, it's pretty well configured, but there's probably about 30 configuration enhancements that I do to the product. And that doesn't have to do with it being an inferior product or anything like that. It just means that when you're a software vendor, you really need to take one of two approaches. I should say a security vendor, because this is an approach that's applicable to hardware as well. So let's say you're a perimeter security appliance. They kind of take a middle-of-the-road approach at first with regards to security. Like, they're going to allow egressing traffic, but ingressing traffic, forget about it. If you want ingress traffic, you've got to open that up. So it's kind of a middle-of-the-road approach. Well, the same thing occurs with your host-based security product like Trend Worry-Free Business Security. In that circumstance, it's pretty darn secure out of the box. But if you're savvy, you can enhance the security, meaning you can actually make full utilization of the feature set that's in that product. Now, if you don't know how to configure that or what to configure in it, then you could certainly spend quite a lot of time poking around in there, or you could just hire somebody to configure it, which would probably cost you less than $100 to do, and it could even be done as a training session. So it would seem to me that that would be a good use of your time, because if your computer gets breached, you're probably going to waste more than $100 worth of your time just trying to get your computer fixed. And I think you all know that once your computer's been breached these days, more often than not, you pretty much are starting over from scratch with that computer, meaning that you usually cannot clean the system, right? So one of the reasons that I really like Trend Worry-Free Business Security Services is because Trend is always staying on top of the game. They have a new product called Cloud App Security, which I'm demo testing, which integrates right into your Office 365 tenant. They have a deep security product that is integrating with Hyper-V and ESXi server hypervisor infrastructure, so that's really exciting stuff. But in terms of the end user for your typical business or your typical home scenario, even at the Worry-Free Business Security Services layer, as of actually today, I think it is October 17th, they have the anti-ransomware functionality automatically rolling out. Last month they had Windows 10 compatibility, and they've got now the anti-ransomware functionality built right into the product. Now, even before that, I'd say as far back as last month, they put out a product called the Anti-Ransomware Tool in Office Scan, and you could actually download this for free. It was published on September 29th, and so Trend produced this free tool for the purposes of removing ransomware from your machine, assuming that you had it. And in fact, I knew somebody who was not a client, but probably will soon be a client, and they had a Symantec corporate antivirus, and they had a SonicWall perimeter device. And they also just have poor configuration in general. And so in terms of ransomware, they did get some ransomware. And this Trend anti-ransomware tool actually helped them to remove the ransomware from their system. So they are deploying Trend Worry-Free Business Security Services, and I am hoping that they're going to get a WatchGuard Firebox and actually have it fully, really, really fully implemented to provide the security. Now, so this leads right into the next topic of defense in depth is no longer the comprehensive approach. So I'd say for probably like the last 20 years, defense in depth has been the buzzword concept. And it wasn't just buzzword. It's not just marketing. It's real meat and potatoes effectiveness. So it's this idea of you need to have multiple layers through which the bad guys can get in order to get at your stuff. Well, this strategy has morphed into something now that's called the cybersecurity kill chain or the cyber kill chain. And the idea with that is that the layers of defense are deeper and they're more rigorous and they function on an egress mode as well. So if bad stuff comes down to your systems and it tries to do something like reach out to a command and control downloader to grab some FTP or some keystroke logger or some encryption device, whatever the bad stuff is, then as it reaches out, it should be getting killed right then and there. You hope it would never even get to the ability to be able to be downloaded, but let's presume it is. Well, with the cybersecurity kill chain, then that traffic or that bad, nasty stuff would not be able to egress effectively. So this now is getting to the point where your only effective approach is not only defense in depth, but also cybersecurity kill chain and, of course, a unified threat management perimeter security appliance plus a properly configured host-based security product is all-encompassing in that for the most part. Clearly, you still have to have proper security protocols and configuration on your endpoints, and you have to have proper network design. You can't be allowing guest traffic to get to trusted traffic, and you actually do have to do unified threat management between subnets. It is not acceptable to just use packet filters straight up. So the cybersecurity kill chain, and I will have a link to it on the site, is something that was developed by the folks at Lockheed Martin as an enhancement to defense in depth. And they've been successfully utilizing this strategy for some time. They utilized it in order to foil a number of really high-end sophisticated attacks that were spearfished against a number of their personnel. And I thought that was very fascinating. So the cybersecurity kill chain is primarily consisted of the kind of a campaign analysis sort of methodology where you're looking at the different ways in which a bad guy might formulate a campaign against you, and then how can you foil them. So instead of just this defense in depth strategy that we've used before, it's now seeking to get you inside the head of the bad guy. What are their motives? What are they going after? Are they seeking to penetrate a particular area so that they can then traverse to another section of your network? What are they really going after? So this is now turning into behavioral analysis. And this ties right into the whole ransomware bit, because on dark web right now, on the underground internet, it's referred to as dark web, you can, for $200 to $250, somewhere in that ballpark, go buy your own ransomware manufacturing tool. And this is just giving you an idea about how ubiquitous and how easy it is to get your hands on this stuff. I mean, little children can get their hands on this stuff now. All they do is apply a credit card to the problem, and whammo, they got themselves a ransomware toolkit manufacturing package. So I looked at the statistics recently, and it was 12,800 new pieces of malware or viruses being identified every hour of every day. So this whole concept of the definition strategy and signatures is complete bollocks at this point. You can't possibly, I mean, there's just not enough human manpower around the world. And I got to tell you, there's a heck of a lot of people working on those signature ideas. There's going to be a point in time when the whole signature strategy just completely dies. Now, maybe it won't be for 15 years from now, but at some point in time, it's going to completely die, because what we're doing nowadays is looking at things in terms of behavior. So if you were to size up any of these varieties of ransomware, you're looking at the fact that it's so incredibly easy to go get a ransomware toolkit, make your own, you know, spice up the content or whatever, make your own, and then rip it and deliver it. So it's now got an entirely different signature than everybody else's ransomware. But, okay, there's 12,800 of these new ones every hour. Okay, so how does this whole signature approach work? In that context, it doesn't work at all. In fact, this is one of the things that Lockheed Martin had identified, is they found that the executable names and their signatures would change depending upon the different attacks. But what didn't really change was the behavior of what was happening. You know, it would go from finding out who the personnel were, sending, you know, figuring out what organizations they were a member of, you know, some sort of a scientific organization, crafting a special newsletter to them, that, or even an invitation to a conference that completely looked like a legitimate one, and then sending that to them in an email, and maybe having a PDF attachment, so, you know, this is the form, fill out this form, and, you know, fax it back to us, whatever. So you open the PDF, and sure enough, the PDF opens, because there's actually a real PDF in there. In fact, the case that Lockheed Martin found that they published about, it was the official form for that conference. It's just that the form, the PDF, had been weaponized with embedded code. So as soon as you open that PDF, bam, this code executes, and it then starts populating out random executable names. So, okay, if they're random executable names with different signatures and that, again, your signature-based detection isn't going to work. But the way that they caught it was, oh, these are some new files, files that aren't authorized to be there, and they're doing weird stuff. So it's behavioral analytics, and then finally, with regards to the attempt to reach out to the command and control package via HTTP, it was just completely dead at that point. So this is very typical with how ransomware behaves, and I've actually had firsthand experience with a residential person who came to me and said, they showed me what they had clicked on and stuff, and that they did indeed actually get ransomware on their system. But the ransomware was whacked by Trend Worry Free Business Security Services. It did manage to corrupt some files. So some of the files got corrupted, but they weren't actually encrypted, and that ransomware was not able to traverse to other systems. So that is a testament to how effective it can be if you're just simply using an endpoint security product. Now, in the circumstance that they were, if they had not been browsing the internet as an admin account, then I don't think it would have ever even gotten that far. And if they were not browsing the internet as an admin account and using Trend Worry Free Business Security Services and putting themselves behind a properly configured unified threat management security appliance, well, I have a feeling that they probably would not have gotten that malware, cryptoware, ransomware stuff at all. Now, that being said, if your perimeter security appliance does not do advanced persistent threat detection, then it is an incomplete solution. And I am experiencing that APTs, are advanced persistent threats, are not real prevalent, but they are horrid. Absolutely horrid. So whatever amount of money you think you're spending on that, let's say an APT subscription costs you $500 a year. Well, a simple single PC rebuild, you figure it's probably full head-to-end 7 hours of labor. You know, recover your files from a backup and recreate your profile and put your favorites back and reinstall your little applications. And, of course, the hardware's got to be actually clean down to the partition level and stuff. And that's only if it's not a virus that infects the firmware on the hard drive, you know. So, I mean, you're really looking at 7 hours of labor. So if you think you can get your PC rebuilt for like $250, I really think you're disconnected from the reality of the situation in terms of what total cost for a single PC rebuild is. And that doesn't even include the cost of the outage to you in terms of, well, I don't have my computer to use. And if you're using that computer for business, well, it's dead the whole time, right? You don't have that computer to use. So what that says to me is that the APT subscription is a darn good idea to buy that. It is much more of a better use of your money, in my opinion, than even buying business insurance. There's way too many people out there that think that business insurance is going to help them deal with this stuff. You know, business insurance is a limited reimbursement mechanism with a deductible. So in the context, you've typically got a $5,000 deductible. And yes, I have run into circumstances where there was in excess of $5,000 of cost or expense incurred in order to get the problem, you know, corrected. But most of the time, it's going to cost you less than $5,000 if you're a small business. So that business insurance, number one, it does not help you actually find a competent consultant to help you. Two, it's only a reimbursement mechanism. You still have to front the cash to, you know, get the issues resolved. And three, that it's up to you may not exceed the deductible, and they're only going to front you the money, or, you know, back reimburse you for the money in excess of the deductible. So wouldn't you have been better off just to spend $500 if that's, you know, if that's how much it costs for the APT blocker subscription? I mean, I would think so. So the cybersecurity kill chain is a really big deal because it is a tectonic shift in the ideology and methodology that is being used by security professionals now. All right, let's move on to something of a somewhat more political nature. President Obama entered into a cyber agreement with China, and there's a lot of people in the security industry that are just calling it outright ridiculous. Yes, they are using the term ridiculous. And the terms of the agreement, in at just a very high level, is this agreement to cooperate with requests and investigate cyber crimes, collecting electronic evidence and mitigating malicious cyber activity emanating from their territory. So, you know, I mean, there's no real sanctions. And if you really think that the Chinese are, you know, when they've got an entire division of their military dedicated just to state-sponsored cyber terrorism, well, yeah, I'm not believing it. And I would say a lot of other people are not exactly believing it. So it's amusing nonetheless. Let's look into cookie handling in browsers and how it can actually break HTTPS security. So there's this whole element that you need to really deeply, deeply, deeply understand, which is that people change their websites all the time, and the security negotiated between your endpoint, whether it be your cell phone or your workstation, your laptop or whatever, and the website, is completely contingent, well, maybe not completely, 98% contingent upon how that website is programmed. Does it force everything HTTPS? Is it true HTTPS? What have they done with non-HTTPS traffic? Are there, what kind of certificate is it? Are they using poor certificate protocols? Are they using an inferior version of TLS encryption? You know, there's just an abundance of things. You may remember all of the issues earlier in the year with the whole SSL certificate debacle, where there were these SSL certificates that were easily exploitable by a backdoor, or rather an unexplored bug, right? And how there was a ginormous brouhaha, and you all got emails from your banks, and they were talking about, oh, well, we're not vulnerable to that security vulnerability. We've updated everything. And, of course, then there were websites that were designed specifically to go and interrogate your bank's website and, you know, other websites for the purposes of assessing their compliance with this security, you know, this new security standard, or whether or not they'd patched the bug. And prior to that, you know, here you are thinking you're having a secure interaction with your banking website, and it may or may not have been secure. Well, you need to understand that concept, that it's not just about what you do, but it's also about what the website developers do. Now, from a security perspective, I'm constantly dealing with crazy web developers that are inventing new HTTP headers all day long. There seems to be very little standard amongst the web developer industry, and there is the ability for them and content management system developers to just come up with whatever HTTP headers they wish to have. And so if you're if you're an IT manager, this is going to sound familiar to you. You've got an end user that comes to you and says, oh, this website, it was working last week and now it's not working. Why? What did you do? What did you do? It's always, what did you do, the IT manager? What did you do? And in reality, it's almost always, what did the website developer do? What did they change? Okay, well, they redid their website or a section of it, and now they're using some new HTTP headers. And so now we've got to go figure out what those HTTP headers are and whether or not we should allow them and then set them up as an allow. You know, I mean, the easy approach would be to just set everything as an HTTP proxy exception, but that is just incredibly and enormously ignorant from a security perspective, and I would never recommend that strategy. But so now that you understand this whole baseline of that, it's all this other stuff that other people can do and are doing that really either improve or reduce the security of your transactions with websites. Now let's get into this element of how cookies and cookie handling in browsers can break HTTPS security. So the cookies are these files that websites create in the browsers in order to remember particular logged in user session stuff. So, you know, you go to Amazon or you go to Yahoo or wherever, and it puts a cookie on your computer. Now, my website, I'll have you know, does not use cookies because I hate them. But if you're going to have a shopping cart, cookies are almost exclusively, 99.999% of the time, that is how some web developer has decided to handle session tracking. One time, I did actually see a very intelligent web developer do session tracking over HTTPS for the end user experience in a very high security way without using cookies. But I have to admit, he was pretty darn savvy, and he was using techniques that are not taught in the school system. And I'm talking about the higher education school system, where people who develop websites are oftentimes going to take classes. So cookies can be abused by attackers in order to extract sensitive information from these encrypted HTTPS connections. And the issue stems from the fact that HTTP state management is defining how cookies should be created and handled, but it does not specify any mechanism for isolating them or actually checking their integrity. So because of that, web browsers don't always authenticate the domain that sets the cookie. And this creates a situation where malicious attackers can inject cookies into plain HTTP connections that would later be transmitted by HTTPS connections instead. So, one of the reasons that this happens is because subdomains can set cookies that are valid for their parent domains, such as like shop.amazon.com. So let's say that is a cookie, shop.amazon.com, and it's valid for the parent domain, and the parent domain is amazon.com. So cookies are not isolated by port number or scheme either. So a server can host multiple websites accessible via the same domain and on different port numbers, and those websites will be able to read and write each other's cookies. Uh-huh. Yeah, you're starting to see the problem here. So because of this, all these inconsistencies create an environment in which man-in-the-middle attackers can perform so-called cookie injection or cookie tossing attacks that can be used to extract sensitive information from HTTPS connections. So some security researchers found that they could attack, or they could actually hijack users' chat gadgets in the Gmail interface, steal Google search histories, credit card information on UnionPay's website, and they could hijack deposits on JD.com. They could hijack Google's OpenAuth and Bitbucket associations and track and manipulate shopping carts on many e-commerce sites, track purchase history on Amazon, and more. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I hope you're starting to see the problem with this. So some web browser vendors have noted previous attempts at more secure cookie management, and they've tried to do things to fix this problem, but they've basically been foiled due to a lack of widely implemented standards. So until the actual standards bodies come up with a solution for this, the issue can be mitigated if the websites are forced, if they're programmed to use what's called HTTP strict transport security as the mechanism that forces the browsers to always access the website over HTTPS connections. However, this goes back to my original point. That functionality is dependent upon the website developer programming that in there. Right? They'd have to actually program that in there. So in a recent survey from the SSL Pulse project, they found that only 4.5% of the internet's top 145,000 HTTPS websites support that HTTP strict transport security mechanism. So, if you are a web developer, please look into implementing HSTS, which is the HTTP strict transport security mechanism. Please look into implementing that. You know, please put your website on SSL and force everything to go over SSL. In fact, I would argue that you'd be in really good shape to set up DigiCert's extended domain validation certificate, which has the ability to make the browser bar go green when all of the content between the user's endpoint browser and your web server is being transmitted securely. So if you're a website developer, or maybe you're a business owner, and you're looking to make sure that your website is going to be perceived by your clientele or your customer base as being secure, then require your web developer to implement this functionality. And I will put these links up for you to peruse. And hope you enjoyed the show. As always, do send me an email to breakfastbites@gmail.com for your comments and questions.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.